Rebag, your premier destination for luxury resale. Elevate your style with our curated collection of bags, watches, and fine jewelry. At Rebag, quality is our priority. Each piece meticulously vetted and verified by experts, ensuring your investment is nothing short of perfection. Buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Access expertly crafted and hard-to-find pieces that redefine luxury. Your next investment awaits at Rebag. Get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's 10% off the luxury you deserve. Don't miss out. Head to Rebag.com and enter code REBAG10 at checkout. That's REBAG10.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello. Well, today, if you're listening to this on Sunday, it's a bit of an exciting day, isn't it? I'm very excited. I'm not a massive football fan. I mean, I do like football. I like it more for the banter. I'm Spurs, and most of the people I know are West Ham or Arsenal, and I just really enjoy the insults, really. And also, my dad is a massive Spurs fan, and obviously England fan, and I just would love it for him, you know, if we actually won tonight. I mean, that'd be pretty amazing. I've always watched, like, the international competitions. I remember Euro 96. Was that when he missed a penalty, or was it 94 when he missed a penalty? And, of course, the New Order song, which is the best football song. I don't know why everyone keeps singing It's Coming Home. I mean, obviously, that is also a very good football song, but it's all about the John Barnes rap for me. Anyway, I digress. If you are watching the football tonight, I hope you enjoy yourselves and do it safely. And yeah, fingers crossed. But welcome to the Mum and Mama podcast. This is not a footballing podcast. Thank you for joining me. My name is Amy. I'm a single parent of two lovely girls who are aged 10 and 7. And I became single parent 6 years ago now. And a few years ago, I thought I'd really like to do a podcast about being a single parent and shine a bit of a positive light on it, because it gets a lot of bad press. But actually, if you're in a bad relationship, you're better on your own, and it hasn't got to be the end of the world. Trust me, there is light at the end of the tunnel. So anyway, I thought I'd do a podcast about being a single parent, and it's kind of evolved now into just really nice chat every week with someone that I find really interesting. So this week I'm lucky enough to be joined by the lovely Jane, who she's actually my cousin's best friend, but she's a trade union rep, so she's very, very much up on her workers' rights, especially female workers' rights. But also she's a running fanatic, and she coached me to do a half marathon earlier on in the year. But Jane is one of the funniest people I know, so I thought she'd be great to come on to share her knowledge about all things rights and running, but also because she's so entertaining, and she did not disappoint, as you will find out in a minute. This podcast is brought to you by the lovely Golding Accountancy, who are the best accountants in the world ever. Wearegolding.com. Love you. Ian, who is my friend, has broke his leg playing squash. So this is one of the many reasons why you shouldn't play squash. Sorry, I don't put my phone on silent. My phone does not stop, as does, well, no one's does it? Anyway, I'm going to stop talking and let you have a good old giggle to the lovely Jane. Bye!
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Work.
Go on.
And they sleep all day. Don't have any of that.
Yeah, that's true, actually. That is true.
I can't believe he's 17.
Yeah.
I feel like he was just going to senior school.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's basically slept through lockdown. And I just thought... What is the point of arguing with it? Why bring that conflict into the house? Like, I go to bed and he's still up. Well, and then I get up and go, turn it off.
You know what, Mum? I think,
well, just leave it.
What's he say? He's playing online?
Yeah.
My friend's got exactly the same problem. She's got three of them.
Yeah, I've given up. I just thought, oh, when you go back to school and you're tired and you're cranky, it's your fault.
Yeah,
I have to deal with it. So that's, I just gave up.
Sorry, Jane.
When I was about to run with the thingy, the shower, the thingy went down.
Sorry, I've just got to go. I'm sorry.
No, seriously.
It's the end of the world. The shower's collapsed.
Can you stop running around? You sound like an elephant. That's all I can hear in my headphones is you thumping around on the ceiling.
The entire shower rail has collapsed completely, like it's all broken. It like couldn't be any worse, do you know what I mean?
I thought she made off of it.
Yes. It was just in the bath, everything's in the bath. I thought that the shower had come out of the thing, do you know what I mean? Like it had fallen down. I didn't realise the whole shower rail had collapsed into the bath.
That's one way to get out of washing.
Yeah. She'll try anything.
I'll show you. Tell me to watch
it. Oh, so today I'm joined by the very lovely Jane Jeffrey. What's your major? Are you Jane MacDonald? Or is that the singer of the cruise ship?
Andrews. I can sing better than her when I have a drink. I channel me in a Whitney.
Jane does a very good thing in the world, I think, anyway. And I wanted to get you on to talk about everything that you do, but also because I'm training to do a half marathon. By the time this comes out, I would have done it, but you've been helping me with my running. And I wanted to talk to you about running as well, because I really don't like it. And I don't understand why you do it so much. I like running for half an hour. But anything more than that, it's so boring.
Well, maybe you haven't got the family that I've got. You know, when I say I'm going for a training run and I'm out the house for 4 or 5 hours, maybe it's the husband. No, yeah. You know, get me out of the house for half an hour is no good because I'm in it and I have to do housework and talk to the family. But, you know, I'm going out for half the day to run. Jobs are good at it.
That is true, actually, because I like it because it's just that time to myself. And I do, I appreciate that. And I miss it when I don't do it. And obviously I appreciate like the physical health benefits as well. Like it does make me feel good, but it's just an hour. Yeah. Okay. But over that, I just feel like it's such a long time. I just can't get my head around it, really, I guess.
It
well, it is a long time, isn't it, really? But let's not kid ourselves. And, it, you know, if you start to commit to that longer distance, that marathon distance and beyond, you're looking at running for a working day or a large chunk of it. But, you know, it's the same as when you first started running, when you first coaching someone and you say to them, can you run for 90 seconds? And they do the first 90 seconds. And when you ask them to do it again, they're practically crying. But eventually they're running for half an hour and still practically crying. And then you expand that period where you can tolerate that awfulness. And then when you get used to it, you can sort of begin to enjoy it, and you can look at the blossom on the trees and you know the clouds, and you can, I couldn't think of anything worse of doing it in an air-conditioned gym with a low ceiling on the treadmill.
No, it is nice to be outside. And I do, like, I've discovered places that are close to me, because now I'm running for longer, I need to find routes that kind of take me that far away from home to then come back again. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not just running around, because during lockdown I was just literally running around my block, because obviously the kids are at home, so
yeah,
I couldn't be too far, and that's a kilometre all the way around, so I just used to keep running around that. But now I'm going on the longer runs, the sooner I get to home, if I've then still got to go that bit further, I find it really hard, because it's like
I don't like adding on when I get home.
I'd
rather plan an 8-mile route. So this weekend, I'm going to take Jamie to do some trail running. And she gets very, sometimes I've made her cry, to be fair, with my, it's not a big hill, it's just a slight incline. I'm not running that. But we've got a new route, but she wants to do 6 miles, but I planned 8.
Yeah.
Because I'd rather walk back with her then get back and have to, like you say, run around the car, or, you know, find a little alley that you're up and down 15 times. So I'd always rather have that walking bit, extra time on feet, and it is building stamina. But she does struggle with some of that quick change of route. We'll do a route and she'll hate it, and then 3 or 4 days later she'll go, I want to do it again, because she knows what's coming. It's that unknown with her.
Yes. Yeah. So when did you get into running?
I suppose I've run on and off forever, really.
Okay.
It was mostly around kind of rowing, because I used to do rowing, obviously, coming from the river background. So it was more of a cardio support to that sport.
Okay.
Then I had Jamie, and it was easy to fit a run around, you know, childcare and, you know.
Yeah.
Then I stopped, then I started, and I probably started again properly in about 2010, I think.
Okay.
Just running, running local, running up and down. Then I found out about Park Run in about 2014, so started to park run locally. Do you do park run?
No.
So it's a global kind of phenomenon now. All around the world, 9 o'clock Saturday morning, it's a free timed 5K event.
Okay.
That it's not a race, it's a run, but people do get some really good times. They always have a tail walker, so some people, you know, will use it. They'll use it as their couch to 5K base.
Yeah.
And then I just started to expand the running, joined a running club, became a run leader, which is the first step, and then became a coach. But I think Park Run is a fabulous kind. They then created Junior Park Run for kids, which is 2.5K. And it's all got milestones, so the children get armbands, the adults get T-shirts when they hit their milestones. And I became a run director for the Junior Park Run locally, so we started to get, there was a group of us that got that off the ground. It was led by one of our club sort of committee members, and she asked a few local people. So, yeah, it's a good way to get to know people. And particularly with the junior park run, people take their kids because they understand about keeping fit. But then you see parents running around with the kids, getting fit because they've got to take their kids around the 2.5K. And then the parents do the catch to 5K. So don't let anyone ever tell you that running is a cheap sport, but it's an easy access sport. And
yes, yeah.
For a while, our club ran our catch to 5K free. And, you know, I think in an area where there's social deprivation, where there's people that, you know, if you ask them to routinely commit to paying for parking, they just can't.
Yeah.
To have free access to that activity for it to be supported is just so important.
Yeah.
Particularly around the mental health thing. So...
Yes, yeah.
And for me, I just love it. I like setting myself strange little targets and sort of going for them. I've done, I've run naked.
Have you really?
It's probably, I kind of thought marathon, anyone could do that. Ultra, yeah, naked. Let's give that a shot.
Where did you do that?
There's kind of a nudist camp in Kent somewhere, and I just thought that pushes every boundary anyone's got. Oh my god,
but did your tits go everywhere?
Yeah. I like to say I ran in trainers and Chanel.
How far did you do a marathon naked?
No, 5K. It was a fast 5K.
Yeah.
Because the noise that the men's bits make slapping on their thighs when they're behind you.
Oh my god. So you did it with other people?
Yeah.
Oh fuck yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. That's brilliant. When did you do that?
I don't know when I did that, but 3 or 4 years ago, maybe a bit longer.
Wow.
It was liberating, but it was also the funniest thing I've ever done. If you've ever stood on a race start and everyone's there with their Garmins going, come on, pick up the satellite. And I kind of looking down at my watch, and then I sort of looked around me and thought, what am I doing? What? And then when they said go, and we started hurtling off down this hill, I just started to laugh and thought, I can't believe what you've kind of got yourself into. My husband was like, it's going to be full of pervs, you know. I was like, okay, well. I'm sure if there's a crowd of naked people, there's other people to perv on but me.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
What other things have you done? Not that you can top that, obviously. Oh,
that's a difficult one. I've set myself... 12 half marathons in 12 months.
Right.
Which I did twice in, it took me 20 months to do 24 half marathons.
Wow.
Then I did 20 half marathons in 2020, which, in case it's escaped you, was a year of a global pandemic. So we couldn't run for 6 months. But I still got 20 half marathons in last year.
Oh my god. How many marathons have you run?
I have run 17 full marathons.
Fuck off.
And 2 ultras.
What's an ultra?
Officially it's over like 26.2, anything over a marathon distance, but really you're looking at over 30 miles.
You really don't like your family, do you?
No. To be fair, you know, I mix with people who have done 100 marathons, and not one or two people, like crowds of them.
Wow.
I did a marathon in Bath, which is the longest underground marathon. You run through disused train tunnels, which is amazing.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that was cool. And I ran it with like the world record holder of the most female marathons. Oh, how many have you done? Oh, I'm just coming up to 800. Like, okay.
800?
I'll sit here as a novice with my, you know. Yeah.
Wow.
So, you know, when you're mixing with those types of people all the time, it does become the norm. And then you kind of say to someone that's normal, oh, yeah, I've done 20. And they go, oh, but it is kind of normal.
But then you get used to it. Like, so before I started your lovely training schedule, I'd never run more than 10K. I'd never run for longer than an hour, 15 minutes maybe. But then now I'm doing more longer runs. I've got to do 13K today or 8 miles. And I'm like, oh, that's an easy one. Because on Sunday I've got to do 10 miles. And then the other week I did 12 miles. So now I'm looking at that thinking, oh, this is an easy one today.
Yeah.
Whereas it's like, I'm doing more than what I used to 2 months ago. So it's funny how quickly you do kind of adjust to.
Yeah. And again, as a coach, you're looking at someone that's never done it, and you're kind of following that sort of progress of upping the miles gently, building the stamina and then tapering. But once you're there, I mean, some people do struggle with injuries and others don't. But once you're there, it's just about keeping those legs ticking over. So you could decide to just do 10 miles once a month, and then whenever you fancied a half marathon, it's in the bag.
Yeah.
You know, once you're at that level.
Yeah.
It's just about staying.
I don't think I will, but thanks.
I mean, I did Disney do and I don't like Disney, but I just thought it's a challenge. So they do, in Euro Disney, they do a run weekend. So you do a 5K, a 10K, and a half marathon all over the same weekend.
Okay.
So I was like, oh, I've got to go and do that. So we went and had a family holiday in Disney, which I also did all of the Disney walking around, the half marathon and the 5K and the 10K. And I just loved that kind of going away and doing something different.
Yeah.
And we got home and I was on a running Facebook page and someone mentioned the Marrakesh half marathon. So I shouted downstairs to Neil, have you ever wanted to go to Marrakesh? Not really. So it's supposed to be really nice. Literally 90 seconds later, I'd booked the Marrakesh half marathon. So we go to Marrakesh. So we went and did that last January. That
really hard doing it in the heat?
It was the change in temperature. So when we got to the start line, it was 3 degrees and freezing cold. And then by the time I'd finished, it was 23 degrees. So it was and anyone that has done any organised runs and has had to use the dreaded port loos, I mean, run toilets are horrific because the runner's trots is a thing. And the toilets in Marrakesh were just a million times worse. And I was really worried about needing to wee en route and not having the toilet. And normally I just jump in a bush, but I thought, you can't do that in a Muslim country, can you? I'll offend everybody at the upload. So I was really worried about running in that kind of, that unknown.
Yeah.
Most of our organised runs, we'll have toilets somewhere en route.
Yeah.
But I was literally running in the desert for some of it. So, yeah, it was a fabulous experience. I feel like they could have upped their game a bit with a medal. But, yeah, it was great fun.
Yeah. Wow. Well... I still think you're nutty. So how I know you, because you're my cousin's best friend.
Yeah.
And you had your first daughter when you were quite young, didn't you?
Yeah.
How 18. Old were you? You were 18. 18. So, and you're not with the dad, are you?
No.
So how was that, becoming pregnant at 18? Well, you've been in the relationship for a long time.
For an 18-year-old, I'd known him since I was 15. That's fair.
Okay.
Right.
But
So when I found out I was pregnant, it wasn't planned, as you can imagine. And I've never taken the pill since because it's clearly like Russian roulette. don't trust myself. you know, I decided that if I was going to do it, it's not just for the baby, right? It's for the, you know, the 7-year-old and the teenager and the, you know, the grown up. We've booked appointment to go and buy a wedding dress in August. So we're planning a wedding now. And I do feel far too kind of cool and trendy to be someone's mother-in-law. And Neil started taking his pension, so I'm also married to a pensioner, so I'm a little bit upset about these labels. Not quite sure, I'm far too trendy. But yeah, I just thought I'm gonna do it. And yeah, I mean, we wasn't together long after she was born.
Yeah,
and I was on my own until she was 5. I was seeing Neil, but I was very clear that he was not going to be part of her life. I didn't end up with him. We married 20 years. It's another grown-up thing, isn't it?
Married.
I don't feel grown-up. And then you say those things and think, who's that? Oh, it's me.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was a struggle. I worked full-time. I went back to work. She was born in the August and I went back to work on the Christmas Eve on a 12-hour shift.
Wow.
And did 12-hour rotating shift pattern, which was awful. Especially
where were you working?
I worked for the Port and London Authority then.
Yeah.
So that was like on their little harbour launch. Then I've transferred to permanent days, which was just as hard because our day started at 8 o'clock or 7 o'clock.
Yeah.
And when you haven't got family to help with childcare, trying to find childcare that's open, you know, sort of 6 o'clock in the morning, you just can't do it. So yeah, I've had all of the tears and the tantrums and the changes of childminders, and you know, it's a huge barrier to women, the hours that you work. It's not the job, it's the hours. And you know, most people now don't work a 9-to-5, but the childcare is geared around, you know, when I moved to Kent, had to pick a school for both of them that was outside, you know, a couple of mile drive away, because I had to pick the school around the childcare and I had to be able to leave by 7 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah.
So you end up with this kind of 2-mile commute to get into the childminder, because all of the local schools, the before school clubs were like 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's no good if you've got, you know, a journey.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's got any easier now.
No.
And that's the difficulty. So in my job now, I'm a trade union officer, so sort of looking at the world of work. And, you know, in diversifying the workforce, we can get women in, right? We can get women into any job. We can get them trained. We can get them working. And then we have this, you know, caring responsibility kick in, which predominantly falls to women. You know, men say to me, oh, I've done the school run. Yeah, of course you have. But, you know, who do they phone? You know, for me, when the phone call comes, oh, she's not very well, can you come and pick her up? And I'm out off Southend in the middle of the river.
Yeah.
At least 6 hours away.
Yeah.
So, you know, the job has to change around those caring responsibilities. And it's not always about being a mum. It could be your partner, your sister, you know,
yeah,
a parent. And the second shift that women have to do on top of their job, which is full time, you know, I worked full time, but I was also a full time mum.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's tough. That is tough. And it's that mental capacity where you've got to be thinking, you know, I've got to pick up the prescription. I've got to get in new school shoes. I've got to make sure that I've got all of this done. And there's never a moment where you're not thinking of something you've got to do.
Yeah.
And that is...
It's that mental load thing, isn't it? Yeah. Did you think there was that cartoon that they did about how the mental load that women have, because it's just you're constantly thinking about the washing, the food, the after school activities, the schooling, and then that's just on top of if you're working, and it is just 24/7. Like, you never, like, I work from home, so I do my housework. I mean, it's funny because Lola's like, I wish you could get a proper job. proper job where I'm out of the house so that when I come home, I don't have to work because I work overnight. Like I've, the last two nights I've worked till gone 11 because it's half term. So during the day I'm doing stuff with them. So then I have to work at night. But I was like, but even if I did go out and do a 9 to 5, so I didn't have to work when I got home, I'd then have to do all the other stuff. Do you know what I mean? So it's, I can't, I'm never going to have that time where I haven't got anything to do. You have to like program in fun time, don't you?
Yeah. And there's that thing, you know, I couldn't tell you what time my children started school or what time they finished because I never did the school run. I dropped them off somewhere else and that was all done for me. I missed every sports day. I missed every school play, often missed, you know, all of those things that the schools go, we're doing it straight after school. There was lots of school clubs that they couldn't go to because the after school clubs didn't pick them up. So that whatever way you do it, there's that mum guilt.
Yes.
That,
you know,
they got things because I worked, but they didn't get things because I worked. And you know, I've kind of learned not to feel guilty at all because it's just a wasted emotion. And
you never win. Even if you were there, you'd still be doing other stuff. And then, you know, you can't win. It's never, and it's never enough for them. You could give them all your attention, you know, it's still never enough, is it?
No. And I also think, you know, the child will remember the time that you sat at the dining room table or you, and made something or you watched a television program with them. They won't remember that they ate pasta and pesto 4 nights of the week, you know.
No. I used to live on that. That's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, Thomas has got a nut allergy, so.
Oh, that's probably.
Yeah.
How did you find out he had a nut allergy, Joe?
he ate a peanut off the floor in the pub. Could write a book about, you know, having his parent in fouls. He's about two, I think.
Okay.
He'd kind of gone under the table and he came up with this big elephant lip that, you know, is oh my God. Yeah, and I just felt awful when I had to go to the hospital and say it's off the floor in the pub. But again, you know, back when they was little, I never drank when I was looking after them ever because I just did not want to be that stereotypical, you know, single mum that turned up at A&E in camp because you can't drive. So, and I still ended up with those kind of frowny looks from my child eating off the floor. They all eat off the floor.
Yes, they do. It happened he
was allergic to it. Yeah. Just so hard I nearly killed him.
Yeah. That's quite a long time before, like, you realise that you had the allergy, though. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't have thought, by the time they got to our age, you thought they would have shown some signs, wouldn't you? Well, so there's no reason for you to think that you would have.
Again, it's all that kind of control of women, isn't it? You know, when you're pregnant, you can't eat this and you can't do that. And mostly, when you look at the number of women that get ill from eating bloody pate, you know, it's just, you might as well get struck by lightning. But it's all of those rules that society put on us as women to make everything harder.
Yeah.
And at the time with, you know, Thomas, it was don't give them peanuts because the size of the peanut can block their windpipe, which I assume is still the same. And also don't give them peanuts because they're likely to get an allergy.
Right.
So, you know, you follow all those rules just to put all that stress on yourself.
Yeah.
And he still ended up with an allergy.
Has he still got it? Do you have them for life? Nut allergies.
Peanut, yeah. And again, it's that kind of stepping out into the world for him. You know, I carry the EpiPens because they're not small. And then when he went to secondary school, it was about giving him that responsibility. Ultimately, he's an idiot boy that's growing up. You know, first time he went to creams, which is a no-go for people with nut allergies. All his mates ordered bloody ice creams with nuts on. And you're like, oh my God, Thomas, I know. Oh, you know.
what happened? Did he have?
He didn't have reaction? Anything. No, thank God. Come home with kind of swollen eyes and needing antihistamine.
Yeah.
And again, you know, Indian food, if you look at most of the fatalities that happen, it's after people have gone to an Indian without their EpiPen.
Right, okay.
And so Thomas knows absolutely he does not step foot into an Indian. But you can imagine the first lad's night out, can't you? Where are they going to end up?
Yeah.
So, and the EpiPens are kind of, you know, quite long.
Yeah.
And they don't fit easily into a handbag, leave alone a lad with... Yeah, I bought him one of those little crossbody bags, so he looked a bit like a drug dealer.
Yeah.
He had his trainers on and... He won't wear it, and I just think, there's another grey.
Yeah. But that's the thing, isn't it? You can't parent them forever.
No.
So... No. So how did you get into your job then? So you started off working on the river.
Yeah.
What did you do on the river?
So I worked lots and lots of stuff, but most of my career on the river, I worked for the PLA in their salvage department. So it's really difficult if people aren't nautical in any way, but it was a big boat with a crane on it and winches on it and anchors. If something sunk, we would retrieve it. That was part of our job. But also kind of maintenance and overhaul. So a little bit like highways maintenance, you know, making sure the river was safe. And the workplace is union organised. So I became a shop steward and branch secretary. Again, you know, in terms of union stuff, I was a branch secretary at 19, which is unheard of.
Why did you work in the river? Were your family on the river?
Yeah, granddad, dad, brother. Disadvantaged childhood, really. I didn't see any difference. Didn't think there was anything weird or strange about it.
Being a woman, though, in that environment? Were you the only one?
Yeah, I was the first woman ever to be employed.
Ever?
Ever.
Ever?
Ever.
Wow. So what was that, in 1990-something?
1993, I left school. I think 94.
Okay.
I think. Last century.
Yeah. Shut up. But that's not that long ago, is it?
No. And it's quite strange, because all of the challenges that I faced, you know, in my job, I look after predominantly male-dominated workplaces, and you find the odd woman in them, and they've got exactly the same challenges.
Yeah.
You know, PPE, one size fits all means one size fits all men, not us. And, you know, if you're talking about sort of life jackets and survival sorts, these are going to keep you alive if something goes wrong. If you're talking about harnesses, so, you know, we have to kind of switch on that PPE is made to fit men, and as women, we need to make sure we get what fits us. You know, wearing boots one size bigger with big socks is not appropriate.
Yeah.
You know, access to toilets. Some of the boats I worked on didn't have toilets, so it was a bucket. And even today, 40% of female seafarers can't dispose of a sanitary towel.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Wow.
Know, many, many women that work in sort of the transport sector, so buses, lorries, you know, maritime, can't get easy access to a toilet.
Yeah.
It's getting better, but a couple of summers ago, meeting with women, bus drivers, lorry drivers, dock workers, were still saying exactly the same. Can't get uniform, can't get access to a toilet.
I've never considered that, being a bus driver. When do you go to the toilet?
And it's easier for men, right, anatomically.
Yeah. Yes, yeah.
Maybe not nice. I'm not saying they enjoy it. But, you know, if women hold themselves, you're talking about infections and, you know, period problems. It's not nice. It's gross. And the argument, of course, is if we uplift those standards for women and give access to toilets, the men's working lives improve as well. And we experience that. Shower facilities, toilet facilities, lockers. Even in some of the buses, like the camera that watches how the driver drives the bus, they didn't take into account the fact that the camera might be looking at their feet on the brake pedals and accelerator, but the women bus drivers wore skirts.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all of those things that the world doesn't think of because the world thinks like a man.
Yes, yeah.
And it is, you know, we're still hearing the same thing. Why didn't you think about what you wanted to do before you, you know, if you wanted kids, why did you do this job? Yeah, but you're not as strong as me. You can't bend this and you can't lift that. And, it, you know, it is, it's still there.
Yeah.
And then combine that with the working hours and the woman does all of that training. But, you know, I work with some industries where it's contractual that you do standby so that you provide 24/7 cover. What woman with a child can commit to that?
Yeah.
And more often than not, increasingly now, and rightly so, men struggle because their partner may go out to work while they're not at work. So,
yeah.
But if people really think that they live in an equal society, they're not paying enough attention. And you know, that's just, as a white woman, I've got a privilege that, you know, women from the BAM world haven't got.
Yeah.
If you're disabled, if you're from the LGBTQ community, there's so many challenges out there.
Yeah.
You know, the pay gap. We're publishing a pay gap. And most women will go, oh, yeah, my company's got a 20% pay gap, and you're not angry about that. Oh, well, no, it's because the men pilots, for example, are crowded in the higher paid jobs, and women are predominantly cabin crew and admin, right? And we're not angry about that then? So yeah. It's the whole
whole
thing that as we take our girls through schooling, you know, the movement around STEM is amazing, getting women into, you know, science and maths because they're the higher paid jobs. But predominantly women will be crowded in sort of English, you know, social sciences, that then invariably puts them in the lower paid industries.
Yeah.
And if we're looking at a pay gap, I mean, there's a whole science around that, but that's not an equal pay audit. And we need mandatory equal pay audits in this country to really show that men and women are being paid differently. And that, you know, there's been a big case recently at the supermarkets where before, if you worked in the supermarket for Tesco's, you were unable to compare yourself to the warehousing because they was different entities, although they're owned by the same company. So those women have had to go to court to get the right to compare themselves to those men. They haven't won their equal pay claim. And these things take, you know, 10 years if you're lucky. So we need legislation that makes companies do these equal pay audits. You know, a woman that, if you look at what the women in the supermarkets have been through, you know, violence, abuse.
Yeah.
You know, that is equally risky on a level to their male counterpart in a forklift truck that is thinking about, you know, the actual mechanics of that forklift truck and that dangerous environment. They're comparable.
Yeah.
You know, the male bin refuse men, refuse women, refuse workers that are covered in your rubbish every day.
Yeah.
That's comparable to the female escort in the school bus that's having the child throw up on her. So,
yeah,
you know, these comparisons should be able to be made across sectors, and there's so much inequality in our world that we should not give up the fight.
So is that why you got into, so when you became a union rep when you were 19,
yeah,
so you obviously had a passion for it, but was that because of the injustices
in things
I got, yeah, so yeah that you faced when you were working? Did you find a lot of discrimination?
Yeah, but what, you know, what you do in a workplace where you're putting up with crap daily about being, and you know, when I started work, I was 16, 17, I was a young girl, you know.
Yeah.
People were asking me about my sex life, people making comments about how I looked, you know, having the deck hose turned on me so your clothes go see-through, You know, people accidentally walking in when you're getting changed, comments that you're not strong enough, comments that I wouldn't let my daughter do it. But I had that burning desire to do that job.
Yeah.
So do I, as a woman, young woman, report that to an elderly man?
Yeah.
Who then goes to human resources at the time, which was men, to be investigated by a man.
Yeah.
And then all the people that I'm working with go, we're not working with her because she's trouble. So I did what most women do, put up with it, joined in a bit, and just carried on regardless.
Yeah.
And most of the women that I represent in terms of harassment and discrimination will say exactly that. I've joined in with it. I've joined in with it for the last 3 years. I've tried to become one of them. And you know what? After 3 years, it's not got any easier and I can't cope anymore. Yeah. I can't do it. And then you're trying to get past that. You know, anyone that stood in a pub and had a conversation around the Me Too movement, well, you're just being snotty. You've just not got a sense of humour. I don't know, you know.
Yeah.
But that's your place of work.
Yeah.
And so it, for me, it became not, and I loved the people that I worked with, and I still do love them all, but they needed educating. Most of them had never worked with a woman. They didn't know, you know, that kind of gross locker room banter. They didn't know that that was unacceptable, because it had never had to be unacceptable.
Yeah.
And there was a few amazing, amazing men that supported me and encouraged me. And I think that they're in every workplace. You've just got to find them.
Yeah.
And we need to, you know, we need to challenge. And I kind of thought when I got old, it would be different. But I'm now older and it's still the same.
Yeah.
Men talking over you. You know, men deciding you're incapable of being able to introduce yourself at a meeting, so they'll do it for you. Or they'll introduce you in a different way to what you've just introduced yourself. So I'm just a little bit, I'm bold. I stick the elbows out and say what other people don't want to say.
So how long did you work in that job for?
I was afloat for 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you put up with it for 15 years.
Yeah, and then you go into the trade union movement and you're tackling that on behalf of other people.
Yes, yeah.
You know, someone said to me recently, not recently in a pub, that would be nice, wouldn't it? But in the last sort of 3 years, oh, I don't see the value of trade unions in the modern workplace. And I think, you know, you stand in the feet of some of the people that we represent, whether it's, you know, sickness absence because, you know, from cancer, mental health, you know, that would undoubtedly, these people would lose their job if they didn't have an advocate sat next to them because they've got other stuff on their mind.
Yeah.
You know, harassment, discrimination. I spoke to a young fella during lockdown and he said I was the first person he'd spoke to that believed what he was facing was racism in the workplace. No one gets it, you know. And to say to somebody, I believe you, is just such a weight off that their shoulders because they've carried this. And it is that thing, is it me? Should I have a better sense of humour?
Yes.
You know, is that sort of, you convince yourself that it's you.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's easier, isn't it? It's easier to believe that because it's horrible to think that the other way, isn't it?
Yeah. I did a seminar recently and this woman said to get on, she was a black woman in an engineering sort of capacity and she was, she sort of promoted that. She was sort of belonged to a group that empowered, you know, people from underrepresented backgrounds to get into engineering.
Yeah.
And we was talking about blind recruitment
And I've had the argument, well, that's all very well, but at some point it's not blind, is it? At some point that prejudice comes in.
Yeah.
And she says she uses the phrase, to get on, you have to get out. So you can be recruited into an organisation, but you are, at the end of the day, a black woman.
Yeah.
And so for her to get on, invariably she had to seek promotions outside of all of the different companies. Because the day-to-day prejudices came in when she stayed at a company. And so it's not easy. There's no easy fix, is there? But we,
no.
But I think with the Me Too movement and the Black Lives Matter, I think what we have to do is get people to acknowledge first that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And far
yeah.
too many people yeah. in society don't. Far too yeah. many people don't.
Yeah.
It's not systemic in society. Yeah.
Well, they've just said, haven't they? They've just said that the government isn't racist. The government said they weren't racist. No, we're not racist.
Yeah.
And the people, I've got friends who they're good, nice people, but they don't think that racism is still a massive problem in this country, even though they wouldn't. I wouldn't necessarily class them as racist themselves, and they definitely wouldn't class themselves as racist. But for me, I'm like, well, I don't understand. I don't know if they choose to see it like that because it's too much of an issue for them to see that it does still exist. Because it's horrible, isn't it? It's absolutely, it's yeah. the worst thing. It's awful. And I just don't know if they want to keep themselves in these nice bubble where they just think, oh, no, it's not that bad. It's not that bad, you know. But it's like until people accept that there is still a massive problem, we're never going to be able to get past it.
Yeah. And I will not be told by a man whether I have experienced harassment. Yeah. That is not his right.
Mm.
So I would not tell someone that they haven't experienced racism.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I've got white skin, so I can't. And yeah. it yes. comes from yeah. the first place of listening, you know, what we've learned about child abuse when, you know, we said to kids, oh, don't be silly, that person's famous, that person's too powerful.
Yeah.
Believe yeah. the victim, believe the yeah. target. And that's the first step to fixing stuff.
Yeah.
And we're not there yet.
No,
we're really not.
And, not.
And I don't know whether that will age out. I mean, you know, the Tories are dying off, which is a great thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, am I surprised that Boris Johnson, with all of his comments in the past, has said that they're not racist? I mean, it's ludicrous. And, you know, are we surprised that the royal family are racist?
Yeah.
No, because they're built on the bloody empire.
Yeah.
You know, come on, let's get with the programme.
Yeah.
So, no, I'm not surprised, but I'm glad we're talking about it.
Yes, yeah.
And we've got to have those difficult conversations. And I think most people, like you've described, live in that bubble of privilege.
Yeah.
And they've never experienced it. And why would they want to make things uncomfortable?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I read, well, I'm not talking to white people about race.
Yes.
And I've recently read a book, I'm going to get the name the wrong way around, Woman, Girl, Other.
Okay.
And it's the most amazing book. It's kind of like all different women telling their story, but they're all in some way connected. So it's a mother and a daughter, and then it goes to the daughter's friend. But all of these women have got different sort of BA and backgrounds.
So yes.
And it's a really enlightening book, but a lot of people wouldn't push their boundaries and read something like that.
Yeah.
So how do you educate people that don't really want to be educated?
Yeah.
We could get rid of the Daily Mail. That would be a start.
That would be a very big start.
And then the Sun. That would be another good start.
Yeah.
You know, but it is in society. It's everywhere.
Yeah. It is. I mean, it's such a hard problem to solve, isn't it? Because it's ingrained in our society. I suppose until all the people that benefit off of it and want it to continue kind of die out. I mean, I think the younger generation are definitely a lot more liberal, and I mean, obviously there are racist younger people, but I suppose the as time goes on, it will get easier, I guess. I just don't know.
I think that when you have difficulties, you've only got to look at history. When you have difficulties, politics moves to the right.
Yes, yeah.
And I think we've made a space for people to move to the right.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I was watching the other day about the police. And he, I think this fella was the first kind of, I don't know whether he was the first black officer to make a certain rank or whether he was like their internal sort of empowerment group for black officers, whoever he was in charge of.
Yeah.
That. He said that, the Met has moved to the right again. And some of the views that years ago would have been not expressed are being expressed. And that's that, you know, when you go into the pub, people say things. And I mean, my husband looks at me and goes, please don't. Because I can't help but say, why did you just say that? Or you can't say that. Or, you know. Particularly around Brexit, I love politics. I watch it like, you know, most people watch the World Cup. And when we was in the pub and someone would say something, I will engage in that debate. I'm an adult. I won't get personal. It won't turn into a row. But my husband just rolls his eyes. Oh, dear, here she goes. But it's important to challenge those views. But it's scary how open people feel they can be with every ist you've got on the spectrum.
Yeah.
In public, you know, they don't know who they're talking to. They are assuming. Yeah. And, I feel comfortable and confident enough to challenge it, and it makes people cringe. And I think that politics and religion should be spoken about in pubs.
Because
if people were challenged in a polite way, I think politics has got nasty. If people were more confident to challenge those smaller comments, it might slowly change the world. But by the same token, you know, women have been fighting for equal pay since the 1900s and we still haven't got it.
Yeah.
So, you know,
if but at least people are talking about it.
Yeah, you know.
And that's the thing, change does take a long time, I guess, but I suppose at least if we're kind of having the conversations, it's better than ignoring it and not saying anything. Like, I always say something because you have to say something, and it's the little things. Like at our gym, there's a movement that we do and it's called a man maker. And I kick up such a stink about it because it's like 90% of the people at our gym are women. I don't want to be a man. The women, I know a good few women that are stronger than all of the men. You know, I'm like, you can't call it that. It's making so many implications, you know, but they take the piss out of me. Because it doesn't matter, it's only a name. But it's like,
but it does.
Those things matter, you know. Yeah. And it's getting
our local gym, you know, the flash adverts, as in their adverts, has not one picture of someone that is anywhere other than white.
Really?
Mm. And I notice those things.
Yes.
I notice those things. And I think to myself, you know, what would I think of that? What message, you know, if I was the parent of a child that was mixed race or had black skin, what would I think of that?
Yeah. You're not welcomed, are you? You're not represented and you're not welcomed.
Job titles that have got the term man in it.
Yeah.
I sit with directors and chief executives and I'm sure they go, oh, here she goes, she's off on one. But gender neutralise it. It matters.
Yeah, it does matter.
And it is those baby steps. I mean, you know, I want a giant leap. I'm not interested in your baby steps, but we're stuck with little baby steps, aren't we? But certainly, you know, some of the people that I work with, you know, you notice some of the fellas starting to not use the male when they're talking about a job title, you know, to start to say stuff around facilities and all of those things, and you think you're learning.
Yes.
And I also, we was running an education course on equal pay, and I wanted the people there that would say anything without thinking about it. I wanted those comments made.
Yeah.
And it was really enlightening to have people approach me and say, I want to come on the course because I don't understand it. And yeah. I've got daughters and I need to. And so we can educate people.
Yeah.
In the right way. Yeah. But I think that we have to have the conversations. And yeah. and there's many, you know, there's many women. I listened to one a couple of weeks ago say, you know, I'm an accountant and I've worked in all sorts of industries and I've never had a problem with men, and I think it's about attitude. And I just thought, wow.
Wow.
Wow. Lucky you.
Yeah.
Lucky you.
Yeah.
And I think if you spoke to her, she would very quickly identify that, yes, she has had problems.
Yes. Yeah.
But again, it is, you know, it is about all of my daughter's friends call themselves feminists. Young women are, you know, and young men are engaged with feminism.
Yeah.
I think feminism needs to really think about, you know, it's all women, and it can sometimes be seen as kind of a middle class movement. So, and I think this sort of wave of feminism is coming from a good place. It's coming from a yeah. everyone fits place. And the education's good. The education's yeah. good. But my worry is that we need to be more than just sharing stuff. There needs to be that political push behind it.
Yeah.
And these young women and young men need to get in, because it's not going to change without politics. It's no good kind yeah. of shunning politics, because that's yeah. how our country's glued in.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
You know, all of those things that are being fought for, from, you know, gay rights to equal pay, there's, you know, even access to contraception and abortion.
Yeah, yeah.
There are people sitting in the House of Commons right now that will take that away from us.
Yeah, yeah.
Tomorrow, in power.
Yeah.
And we can never, ever, ever forget that. That's, you yeah. know, we've got to do a job of work and educate our daughters and our sons.
Yeah.
That we risk losing all of that if we don't. Yeah. If we don't keep pushing.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I always say it's not about smashing the glass ceiling. It's about reaching out and taking someone else with you. You know, as a woman, yeah. I am constantly trying to find women that I can develop, whether it's in running or, you know, at work, empowering women, sharing, you know, positive body image, being comfortable and confident. And that might be because I'm 43 and couldn't care less what people think or what they say, but it's important to empower others around us, not just yeah. be comfortable with what we've got.
Yeah.
And again, that, you know, back to running, I suppose that's my thing. You know, I want to coach women that have to juggle childcare and life with their desire to set themselves a challenge, whether that's catch the 5K yeah. or, you know, whatever it is. And I think as a woman, you know, we all talk about self-care, but as a mum, you have to teach your children that they're valuable. Yeah. And if you're always putting yourself at the bottom of the pile and not doing what you want to do,
yeah,
what message are you sending those kids? So,
yeah,
you know, I think saying, mum's going for a run, whether it's half hour or 4 hours, and it's mum's time, teaches yeah. them that they're entitled to invest in themselves as well.
Yeah. And it's important to. Yeah. It's important to have that. What's the word? Self-improvement. And with the exercise, it is so good for your mental health, and it's a responsibility to look after yourself as well, yeah. I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a really good thing to teach your kids.
And when, you know, when people say to small children, what does your mum do? What does your dad do? You know, for with all of the problems we've got with body image, for children to identify power and strength and all of those positive things with the body is so important. It's such an important message. You know, my mum runs marathons.
Yeah.
We can all go... No teenager likes their mum. No, you know, you've got all of those normal parent things, but there will be, that's something to say about your mum.
Yeah.
That my mum's in that 1% club. It's, you know, my mum.
Naked.
Yeah, my mum did Couch to 5K. And, you know, we all ate cake when she graduated. It's such an amazing, it doesn't have to be about crazy distances.
Yeah.
If you go from, you know, the sofa to 5K, that's a huge achievement.
It's massive. It's massive.
You know, when people say we go for a run, oh, what are you running? Oh, I'm only doing 5K. There's no only 5K. You're running 3 miles. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah.
I might be running 6, but you're running 3 miles, you're lapping everybody on the couch, you're doing your, you know, your mental health, your body. There's nothing bad about that.
Yeah.
It's important.
It is
to recognise that and empower people when they're doing it.
Yeah. It's a massive achievement. I think that's such a great thing. Because once you've done that, it makes you think, oh, what else can I do?
Yeah. And for a lot of people, it's charity, isn't it? They'll find something and they'll set themselves. So not only are they improving themselves and doing something amazing themselves, they're also doing that for a good cause.
Yeah.
And that, you know, when they talk about, what is it, the 10 keys to happiness, you know, doing stuff for others, keeping fit. Yeah. As soon as you get into that support, you're kind of ticking all of those things.
Yeah.
It is it's an amazing thing to watch people do.
Yes. Not naked.
That was not amazing.
Oh, God. Oh, thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. I'm just going to keep thinking about the noise.
Oh, it was awful.
Oh, God.
And you're very conscious when you're queuing up for a drink afterwards that you don't body check anyone. On the start line, someone bent down to do their shoelaces. Like, oh, my God.
Oh, God. On that bombshell.
It's twice a year.
In Kent.
Yeah.
Wrong side of the river. Oh, thank you, darling. And, thank you. I don't know what else to
say. You're welcome.
I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, you've got to go for your run.
I know. Oh, God, yeah, thanks. All right. Bye.
Might be wet.
Hi. When I edited that, I was crying, even though I'd obviously already had the conversations with her, but just the image of her doing that naked 5K. I mean, oh, I love you, Jane. I love you so much. Thank you for sharing your story and just making me laugh and being an awesome person. And when I started running, I did not enjoy it. And now it's part of my mental health routine. I miss it when I don't do it. I actually went for a run the other day. So I did the half marathon in May and I've not run for a couple of months because I've done something to my ankle, but it doesn't hurt. It's just really swollen. Not really swollen. It's not too bad. But I went for a run the other day and I was like, I've really missed this. So, and I hated it. So there is hope for everyone. And the Couch to 5K, she coaches people because she loves it and she knows how good it is for you. And anyone can run. Well, actually, not anyone can run. But if you can run, then you should give it a go. Yeah.
I'm a bit hyper. I've just had a cup of tea. Sorry. Anyway, fingers crossed for later. Enjoy it. Wouldn't it be bloody lovely if they did it? So, yeah, fingers crossed. Next week, who have I got on next week? Let me have a little look on my computer. Oh, I've got something exciting to tell you. So if you've not listened to my episode with the Epic Life Coach yet, listen, because Nikki is a legend. But we are coming together to give advice to single mums who, with an array of issues, just from our own experiences of how we've had to deal with life and dealing with our children's fathers. And just, well, there's a lot of things that obviously we have to deal with as women. So she's given me advice in the past about dealing with a situation with my girl's dad. And I thought, the world needs Nikki. The world needs her advice. So I've asked her if she'd fancy doing some like advice sessions with me. And we're going to film them and put them up on the internet. On the internet. So, yeah, you'll be able to see those soon. But if you've got anything you'd like advice on or a situation that you have experienced and would like to know Nikki's point of view on it, or something's coming up and you'd like some advice on how to handle it, get in touch with me or Nikki. We're on socials, obviously. My email is mumandmumapod@gmail.com. She's the Epic Life Coach on Instagram and Facebook. I'm mumandmumapod on the same. So yeah, get in touch. And next week, I'm going to put out the Gail Porter episode. I was lucky enough to talk to the lovely Gail, legend, and I'm going to put her episode out next week because she's lovely and we all love to hear it. So yeah, have a wonderful week. Take care. Stay safe and sane. Big love to you all. Thanks for listening, and please share this podcast. Take care. Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.